Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it was accompanied by a glass of bourbon. The sports world on whiskey. Basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. We will get inside the hearts and minds of many distillers and help you understand what and how they are achieving it. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond boring podcasts featuring just tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and you want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will need to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. Welcome again, Whiskey Shenanigans fans. We are here and we are very, very excited to have with us today George Harper from Johnny Walker. And welcome, George.
Thanks, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here. Really pleased to be here to meet you and talk to you about some whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. So fun. Johnny Walker, you know, it's known, it's a big brand. It's the blending and everything like that. I have noticed, and we'll get into a little more of the details on some of the new innovations that you guys have done, because that's the fun stuff. But, you know, before we do that, how did you get involved with this?
Yeah, so I've been working with Johnny Walker for just over 10 years now. And before that, I actually was a craft brewer in Scotland. So tried my hand at making beer for a number of years. But going even further back, what I did was I went to university and studied chemistry. And then that led me to changing courses to studying brewing and distilling. So I got a degree in brewing and distilling. Did a student placement here at Johnny Walker. And then, after I kind of hung up my brewing boots, decided to come back to the whiskey side of the industry. So that was a kind of short summary of how I got here.
Yeah, good choice. I think this industry is a lot of fun, and it's kind of followed the craft. I don't know about over in Scotland, but in America, the craft brewing industry really exploded, 10 or 20 years ago. And, you know, it's just everybody was making beer out of everything. And I mean,
yes.
There was a place down in Delaware, tiny little state of Delaware on the East Coast, that got bought up by a larger distillery or a larger brewery, but they would put anything in the beer. They tried everything. I mean, they had hundreds of experiments going. I was joking around with a friend, like they'd put dirty socks in the beer if it made it have a certain taste. It just didn't matter. It's like, well, let's try peanut butter. Let's try, you know, whatever. Let's try anything. Dogfish Head was the name of that.
Oh, I know it well. Yeah, I think similar story here. You know, I was lucky the time I came into brewing was kind of during that kind of, like you said, 10-15 years ago, that rise of the craft brewery. And, you know, I think when I came into the industry, there was maybe, you know, a dozen breweries across Scotland. I think by the time I left, it was probably about 50, you know, it had just really exploded. So yeah, and we weren't quite as mad as some of those innovations, but we were trying everything from, you know, blueberry wheat beers to, I made a non-alcoholic ginger and lemongrass beer at one point. So we were trying everything really.
That's great. I mean, and it is fun to experiment. You have done some really interesting stuff. I mean, like at Johnny Walker. I mean, I was looking through the website. I'm like, you know, tell me about this, White Walker innovation that you did.
So what early on in my kind of career of working on Johnny Walker Innovation, we kind of got approached by our kind of innovation and marketing teams that kind of work on all those things. And they said they had an interesting collaboration. They wanted to work with HBO and the Game of Thrones TV show to come up with a whiskey that could, you know, launch around about whichever season it was that was kind of launching on the TV at the point. And it was a dream kind of role for me because I was a massive fan of the books even before the TV show started. So it was fun. It was really kind of looking at how we can tie in some story cues to themes of the show, but also it was a really big opportunity at the time to kind of broaden Scotch. You know, that was the kind of push from our side, was, you know, Scotch at times can be a difficult category to get into, particularly for people new to whiskey at all. And it was how can we make a Johnny Walker that would be a bit more approachable, a bit more friendly to the new consumer and bring them into it, because we knew there was going to be reach with the success of the TV show and the people that would kind of be attracted to it, you know, that they would bring people in. So that was a really fun, you know, kind of thought process of, you know, well, you know, we've got this wealth of Scotch whiskey in our inventory. What can we bring that will kind of cue some of those kind of lighter, fresher, more enticing flavors, you know? And so, yeah, it was a fun time to be involved with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I was a big fan of the books before the show came out as well. And like, you know, way before the show came out. And I read the first book, I don't even know, when it first came out. I don't even know when that was, 2005 maybe, or maybe even before, maybe in the 90s. I was like, oh, this is, you know, really crazy book. You know, this is wild. You know, nobody had ever heard of it. It was some like weird, you know, kind of Lord of the Rings-ish kind of thing or something or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't read the rest of them at that point in time. I don't think they were even out yet. And, then all of a sudden this show many years later comes on HBO and I'm like, I've seen this before. Wait a minute. Now we fall. This looks familiar. Like, especially the first scene, you know, where they throw the kid out the window and all this stuff. It's like, what is happening on this show? And I'm like, I've seen this before. Then I went back and I read all the books. And, you know, got way ahead of the TV series, but it's fun stuff. But so in your blend, you blended some whiskeys together to make this special release.
Yeah. Completely new innovation. So it was looking at, you know, like, because of some of the themes in the show, it was looking at whiskeys that were kind of distilled in some of the colder parts of Scotland. And then, like I said, touching on those kind of more approachable flavors, things like vanilla, things like fresh orchard fruit. And, you know, we're massively lucky at Johnny Walker that we've got, you know, 30 distilleries, that we can pull from to kind of bring those flavors to the forefront. So, and with Johnny Walker, you know, that's what's great about blending, is being able to go, well, we can bring these whiskies that have a lovely vanilla flavor to them. We can bring these whiskies that have lovely kind of freshly cut green apple, you know, pair them together into a blend and really showcase the flavors. So yeah, it's a fun part of the job.
How many distilleries did you say?
We've got over 30 distilleries. So
Are they all over Scotland? Are they all kind of co-located? Or?
Yeah, all over. You know, we've got quite a lot up in Speyside, a few distilleries out on Isla, which is, you know, as whiskey fans will know, is where a lot of the big smoky whiskies come from. Right down to the lowlands, you know, round about just outside Edinburgh, we've got a lovely single malt distillery, Glenkinchie. And then, yeah, just across the breadth of Scotland, you know, an absolute gift of an inventory to be able to play with, you know, as well as our grain distilleries as well.
That's amazing. So many years ago, before I'd started doing this podcast, you know, and before I even went to Scotland for the second time, a Johnny Walker rep came to the country club that I was part of, and he brought in all these, you know, test tubes and all this stuff. And, you know, we had about 30 people there that night, and we had a competition to see who could take all these different blends and these different components and make Johnny Walker Black out of it.
That's a tough task.
Yeah, great. We tried some Johnny Walker Black, and you know, and then we're like, okay, it needs a little more pee, needs a little more of this. Trying to get it just right. We came in second that night.
Well done. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Wasn't too bad, but it was fun to do. And you're like, wow, this is. And I can imagine, is that kind of like what your job is there?
Yeah, a lot of it is. Yeah, it's you know, I like to describe as that we're looking for a balance. You know, it's like you say, taking all those different, you know, for us cask samples and mixing them in different kind of different quantities and levels to, like you say, get that kind of peat level right, or you know, dial up some of the sherry notes, or you know, some of the fresh fruit notes or dried fruit notes or whatever it may be. But ultimately you want a balance. You don't want one single flavor in blended whiskey to kind of dominate the blend. You know, you want a balance of whatever the flavors are you're looking for in that particular blend to just be right, so that, you know, you get almost a spectrum of flavor across the blend. You know, that's really, and that's a big part of our day to day, looking after, you know, things like Johnny Walker Black Label, but also working on new innovations, coming up with new recipes, new kind of expressions of whiskies that we can put out there. So yeah, it's a fun job. Yeah.
There's one, something about King George. What's that one about?
So King George, that's a bit before my time, but that was a really, you know, more of our kind of high-end Johnny Walker products that was really kind of showcasing some of our rarer whiskies in the inventory. You know, you know, I touched on the fact we've got about 30 distilleries at the moment, but we also have some inventory of older closed distilleries that we can go from as well. And so it's really a showcase of bringing together some of that rarest whiskies in our inventory together to create something like a really special bottle, you know, that would make for a fantastic gift or something, you know.
Right. So you're like a chemistry guy, and you know, but so how did you develop your nose and your palate to be able to taste all these different? Because when I did it, it was hard. It was difficult, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's something I like to say to people. It's like an ongoing thing. You know, you don't just learn it and then, you know, you're a master. You know, I still feel like I'm developing. It's funny. It probably goes back beyond, like, my whiskey days. You know, I grew up having a passion for cooking, you know, and you know, coming home from school, watching cookery shows, learning how to cook, how to pair flavors together, and then that kind of progressed into my career. And it's a lot of it's about understanding how to describe flavor. You know, you might be able to pick up that it's fruity, but, you know, can you kind of discern whether it's, you know, is it peaches, is it apples, is it more tropical fruits, you know, and really building up that vocabulary, that experience. And that grows over time. The more exposure we get to nosing whiskey, to trying new whiskies, whether it's, you know, whiskies my colleagues have made, whether it's competitor whiskies, whether it's whiskies from around the world, you know, we like to have an open mind and, you know, be part of the kind of whole whiskey landscape, you know, because there's, as you'll know, there's fantastic whiskies in the US and Canada and Ireland, you know, even Japan and further afield. So really just getting really delving into that world of flavor and pulling out different flavors, seeing what works for you, what you like, what works together well. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been trying to learn that over the past, you know, 18 months or so, like done a lot of work in that. Is that your flavor wheel behind you there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm recording this in our nosing room in the labs in Scotland. So that's just, the Scotch whiskey flavor wheel that we have out just there is a little thing to refer to as you're nosing whiskey. If you're kind of trying to pinpoint and narrow down exactly what it is you're nosing.
Right. It's like, what am I smelling? What is that? You know, and you kind of like, okay, was it in any of these categories? And then you can narrow it down a little bit further. That helps.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But it also takes a lot of practice, you know? So you've been at it for a long time though.
Yeah. As I say, yeah, over 10 years. And it's just a constant learning, refining, getting better as the days go on, getting better as the new whiskies you make as well. You know, sometimes a new innovation will be an innovation on a previous innovation, and it's you know refining it more, taking new learnings in and improving it. So it's a constant process of just trying to be better, trying to deliver more exciting new things.
What's the craziest blend you ever put together?
I think I did an innovation for Johnnie Walker a number of years ago. It was actually a Blue Label innovation. So it was Blue Label Elusive Umami, and it was we were tasked with coming up with a Blue Label that kind of looked at umami flavors and how can we bring that into whiskey. And I think the real exciting, kind of challenging part of that was working with a Japanese chef who owns a restaurant in Paris, Michelin starred chef, and working with him to kind of understand what umami was and how umami could be shown in a whiskey was really exciting and really kind of thinking out of the box in terms of what inventory we could use in terms of bringing some of those more savory umami flavors into whiskey. That was probably the most challenging and also most rewarding kind of whiskey to work on.
Yeah, because it's different. I mean, umami's not, it's not like a lot, it's not fruit. It's a very different kind of flavor, you know. So it's got to be difficult to put that. How do I put that into a whiskey? How do I bring those flavor notes out?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a combination of things. A lot of it was just kind of thinking about more savory notes that we do have in whiskey. You know, we have some wonderful distilleries like Mortlach that has like a meaty character to it. You know, if you think about maybe like smoked meats or cured meats. So bringing some of that in, but also bringing some of the kind of smoky notes, the kind of minerality, the salinity we get from some of our coastal distilleries, bringing them together. But actually, learning from the chef himself and understanding that it's almost like a deliciousness in umami. It makes you want to take another sip. So it was kind of looking at that and trying to incorporate that into the blend and having balance as well. Sweetness was important. We couldn't just make a full on umami whiskey. You would need it to be balanced with some of the other flavors. And actually, sweetness helped bring out some of that kind of meaty, savory notes. And I'm really proud of it. And went down really well in terms of the feedback we got from consumers and the chef himself. You know, I think there was nothing more validating than having a Japanese chef happy with the blends that I'd created, in terms of delivering to that brief of creating something umami.
Yeah, somebody who really knows and has been working with it for years and years and is really good at it and is going like, yep, that's it.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a proud moment.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, that's great. So Scotch is interesting in the sense that it's really tied into, Scotland's heritage and the history and everything like that. You know, and here in America, we're building our own history in the bourbon area and all that kind of stuff. And everybody's, you guys, I think, in Scotland have done a good job, better job of getting your whiskey out first, maybe not first, but here in America, but also like in India and places like that. And there's like something like half a billion or so Scotch drinkers in India, right?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing this small country of less than 6 million people has got this product that's just known globally. I think and that's as well as the heritage and the tradition. Some of the distilleries are over 200 years old here. It's that idea that it's this recognizable product around the world. It makes us proud. It makes us I suppose, enthusiastic and encouraged to kind of keep that tradition going and keep that, you know, that Scotch name sort of up there with some of the best products in the world. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I think, you know, yeah, we're lucky that it's been embraced, like you said, in places like India, the US, of course, Canada, China, you know, all across the world. It's a wonderful industry to be a part of.
I can imagine like in India, you know, like they make some stuff, but it's probably not nearly as good as what you guys make. And, you know, to have a bottle of Scotch on your shelf would be like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think so. I think, but India is an interesting market as well. Do you know, they've got some really good distilleries themselves that are, you know, really uplifting their own industry. And, you know, they still, you know, use a lot of Scotch within some of their brands, but you know, they're beginning, like so much other countries around the world, are really, it's a burgeoning industry in those countries to kind of make their own whiskey and make it unique and part of their own culture, you know. And I think that's brilliant, you know. I think that's great for whiskey as a whole, you know, that so many countries are trying their hand at it and making some exceptional whiskies.
Yeah. How do you see like Scotch influencing the culture in your country and maybe even influencing the culture in America? Those are probably two different questions.
Yeah, I think in terms of here in Scotland, you know, there's definitely a loving ownership to Scotch, you know. And you know, as you said yourself, you've been to a lot of distilleries across Scotland. You can see in the communities how important and how beloved Scotch is, you know, whether it's simply in the jobs that it brings to local communities, but also the kind of tourism that it brings. You know, there's nothing better than being, you know, I live in Edinburgh, but you know, meeting people from around the world and they want to talk to you about Scotch because it's this known thing. So I think it's really ingrained in our culture, you know. There's because we've so many distilleries in such a small country spread across, you know, all the mainland, all the islands, you know, it's really, you know, integral to Scotland and part of what makes Scotland so unique. And in terms of the US, you're probably better to answer that than me, but I think there's a wonderful connection with Scotland and Ireland as well in the US, with, you know, a lot of kind of Irish American and Scottish Americans that, you know, have an affinity with Scotland and you know, their ancestors coming from there and so have kind of embraced Scotch and you know, that's this wonderful thing and it kind of sits alongside American whiskey. You know, it could be, you would imagine with such a great industry like you guys have in America, that why do you need Scotch whiskey, you know, but you embrace it and you love it, and it's a fantastic market for us. And I think that there's definitely something tied in with that kind of heritage and that connection that Scotland and America have. So I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and Scottish, I mean, any whiskey is, like I was thinking of like TV shows like Yellowstone that are more, you know, more current and things like that. And, you know, so many deals, decisions are made just with a drink of whiskey, you know, sitting down, two people, three people, yeah, like, you know, let's hash this out. Let's have a drink. And now let's go do this, whatever it is.
I see that as well. You know, like there's a little pride in my Scottish heart when I watch an episode of Suits or Mad Men and a bottle of Scotch is open. So it's fantastic.
Absolutely. It's fun. I mean, that's part of the culture too. I mean, it's like, okay, let's figure this, whatever problem we got, let's figure it out. Let's get a, you know, let's work out our differences or our issues or what direction we're going to go next. And, you know, and then bam, let's go bang that glass on the table.
Exactly. And I think that what you said there, the fact that it's fun is such an important part of it. You know, like, no matter what whiskey it is, that I don't know if there's many other drinks where, you know, friends, new acquaintances can get together and they'll sit and have a glass of whiskey and that bottle will be on the table and it will be a conversation topic. You know, it'll be part of that conversation. It'll be part of that meeting, that friendly, you know, moment together, which is amazing.
So if somebody's new to Johnny Walker, where would they start?
Good question. I think touching on, you know, going back to the White Walker conversation, touching on some of the innovations that we've done recently, you know, we've really broadened the Johnny Walker portfolio in terms of bringing in more kind of lighter approachable blends. So something like that. So, you know, Johnny Blonde or Johnny Walker Red Soul, kind of more recent innovations are in that kind of sweet vanilla kind of flavor space are great introduction whiskies. I think if you're already a whiskey drinker and are looking to maybe, you know, discover more about blends and blended Scotch whiskey, I think you can't go too far than a bottle of Black Label. I think that's really the kind of standard for, you know, balanced, you know, blends, you know, bringing out a range of different flavors together and being perfectly balanced, perfectly, you know, perfect as a neat serve, but also works incredibly well, whether it's in cocktails, highball serves, any mixer you can imagine. I think you can't go too wrong with that.
Yeah, fantastic. And after the black, then comes the blue. Kind of
It depends. I suppose it depends. If you're looking for that kind of refined traditional Scottish blend, yeah, blues are a great kind of next step. If you're looking for something maybe a bit more playful, I suppose, something that works really well in cocktails, maybe Johnny Walker Gold Label Reserves, a great kind of next step, or something a bit more refined, you might go to 18-year-old. There's, you know, it's a fantastic brand in terms of the wealth of options that you have. And hopefully as well, you know, I always say if you like one Johnny Walker, you're probably gonna like many others. So, you know, that getting into Johnny Walker, you've got this kind of massive list of whiskeys that you can then go and discover and enjoy. So,
and you guys have a massive experience in Edinburgh, right?
We do. Yeah. It's been open a number of years now. It's we call it our brand home, the Johnny Walker Experience in Edinburgh. It's I suppose Johnny Walker being a blended whiskey brings whiskeys from all across Scotland. So it doesn't have its own distillery as such. It has many distilleries. So this was really us being able to build a brand home, like a distillery visitor center, where people can come and learn about Johnny Walker, learn about the 200 plus year history of Johnny Walker, learn how to enjoy Johnny Walker in terms of, you know, on the tour, you can try a range of different Johnny Walkers, knee in cocktails, in highball serves, and really learn a bit more about the world of Johnny Walker, the world of blending. We take you through an experience where you learn, you know, how we bring flavors together, how we go about blending. And then, you know, you can enjoy the tour and then go up and enjoy some lovely food and drinks in a rooftop bar right in the center of Edinburgh with, you know, amazing views of the castle and the streets around the old town of Edinburgh. So it's a beautiful place, wonderful place to come.
Yeah, that's I was reading about that and I'm like, I was all over Scotland, but I guess I didn't spend enough time in Edinburgh. I don't know, but I'm like, how did I miss the Johnny Walker Experience? I mean, a rooftop bar and everything like that with the views of the castle. That's amazing. And it's like, oh, I got to go back now.
Well, it's a good excuse, Randy, to come back. No problem. I'll join you I'll take you around if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'd go up to the rooftop bar and, you know, have a few drams together and watch whatever's happening down on the streets. You know, that'd be cool. It's about five stories up or something like that.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Beautiful.
That is cool. That is cool. Well, listen, that we thank you so much for being on the show today and introducing us to Johnny Walker and everything that you guys are busy. You're doing a lot of cool stuff. We're just, you know, touching on the world of Johnny Walker here. And
yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Bringing it to our listeners. And, you know, a lot of our listeners are probably all of them are American at this point. And, you know, so they're interested in scotch, and they may have started with scotches and then they also tried bourbon, or maybe they tried bourbon and went to scotch. I don't know. You know, it's like, but, you know, it's all good. So
exactly. Yeah.
We're all learning about it together. So we thank you so much, George, for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much, Andy. It's been a pleasure, as I say, to meet you and to just be part of the show.
Yep. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Yeah, same to you, Andy. Goodbye.
Welcome again, Whiskey Shenanigans fans, for the shenanigans portion of this episode. So today we're going to tackle a topic called how to start your at-home whiskey bar for less than, say, $500. That sounds pretty reasonable. And what should you buy first? And so this is an interesting topic. I mean, I'm sure there's a million different opinions on what you should buy first and what you should have in your at-home bourbon or whiskey bar. But here's mine. Over the past year, I've talked to a lot of these master distillers, and I've been impressed with some of them. I've tried their products. I've been impressed with their products, some more than others. But you know what? In a lot of these episodes on the podcast, I ask these distillers, hey, you guys have like 8 different, you know, versions of your product. How's the regular guy supposed to know when he walks into Total Wine? How's he supposed to know? Where do I start? You probably don't want to start with a barrel strength, something, 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 you know, like, no, too much, right? If you're new and you're getting started and you're thinking, hey, where's a good place to start? So that's what this is all about. Okay, so I thought about a bunch of different brands, and there's so many to choose from. But what I have found is that a lot of the larger brands or the larger distilleries, which is tricky because if you're new, you don't know exactly what's coming from what distillery, right? So it's not always clear, you know, where is this bourbon coming from? Where is that bourbon coming from? Here's 2 bourbons with completely different labels, completely different names that are being made at the exact same place. So it's kind of like, you know, if you ever go out and buy a car, like today it'd be a Kia and a Hyundai. 50 years ago it'd be a Chevy and a Firebird. They're, you know, our Chevy and a Pontiac, they're going down the same manufacturing line, right? Over and over and over again. And they're really virtually the same product, but you wouldn't necessarily know it. And there's some somewhat significant differences between products. So what are the starter products in some fairly large distillery brands? Okay. So I thought about this and I'm like, okay, we're going to start with a complicated one. I think it's complicated anyway. They probably don't think it's complicated because they invented it. But Four Roses is just a fantastic bourbon. You got to have a bottle of Four Roses in your new whiskey bar, okay? Four Roses has 10 different recipes, and they have letters for each recipe that uniquely identify that recipe. So I'm going to give you the 4 letters, but really there's only 2 that matter. You know, they all start with O, so that doesn't really mean anything, right? The 3rd letter is always an S, meaning straight Kentucky bourbon whiskey. So really it's the 2nd and the 4th letter that mean something, right? So you want to go out and buy yourself a bottle of basic Four Roses OBSO. So what does that mean? O, like I said, doesn't really mean anything. B means it's got a little more rye in it. And a little rye grain is good. So you're thinking, oh, I don't like rye. No, 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 no. You've got the wrong, you got the wrong. I had that thought too. You got the wrong thought. I had the wrong thought. Rye is really good. Rye is what helps a nice bourbon make a great cocktail because it doesn't get overwhelmed by all the other flavors that you're adding to a, to an old fashioned or a Manhattan or a, you know, something like that. So a little bit of rye gives it a little body. So you want a little bit of rye. So you want the B as the second letter. So OBS. And the fourth letter really is, you could go with a couple different ones. You could go with an O, you could go with an F, or you could go with a V. I'm going to say go with a V because I really like the single barrel, and that's what that's all about. So OBSV, you'll see it on the bottle. You look at the bottle, read the label, you'll see those four letters on there. That tells you the recipe that they use to create that particular bottle of bourbon. $20, guys. $20. I just looked it up. Total Wine, $20. Come on. It's a really good bourbon for $20. Are you kidding me? What else is really good for the price? Elijah Craig, small batch. Elijah Craig, I wrote an article called Punching Above Their Weight Class. So this is like a boxer who is a middleweight who knocks out a heavyweight. Elijah Craig is fantastic, and it's not expensive. This particular one, because it's a small batch, and there's a lot of terminology you got to get used to, right? Small batch is part of that terminology. It doesn't mean a lot. All it means is they took a bunch of barrels that are supposed to be pretty similar in age and whatnot, and they blended them together to make a small batch of this particular version of the whiskey. So, and small batches, because they're blended together, they should be fairly consistent in their taste. On Elijah Craig's small batch is $54. Not bad. The third bottle you may have heard of, especially if you've dabbled a little bit in this particular area. The third bottle you should get is definitely Buffalo Trace. Again, huge distillery. Okay, so you might not. I mean, back up for a second. Four Roses is big, okay? Elijah Craig is bigger. Elijah Craig comes from Heaven Hill. That's the name of the umbrella company. Heaven Hill makes Evan Williams, Elijah Craig, Parker's Heritage, Larceny, and a whole bunch of other products. Elijah Craig is where you should start. Now, if you want to start a little even simpler than Elijah Craig, you go with Evan Williams. It's just the same thing. It's only aged less. I don't know why you'd want it to be aged less. It's cheaper. But I'd suggest you go with the Elijah Craig because you're going to be like, wow, that's hard to beat. Because you're gonna move on from this starting point where you get a bunch of bottles and you're going to go, all right, you know what? I'm looking for something that's better than this Four Roses that Randy told me to buy. That's better than the Elijah Craig that Whiskey Shenanigans told me to buy. That's better than the Buffalo Trace that Whiskey Shenanigans told me to buy. Buffalo Trace is from the Buffalo Trace Distillery. They make, oh my goodness, so many products. There's a product called Benchmark. There's a product called Buffalo Trace. There's a product called Colonel Taylor. You know, there's a product called George T. Stagg. There's a product called Bland's. There's a product called Pappy. There's a product called, and I'm missing a bunch. There's so many. There's so many products. Sazerac is the umbrella company that owns this whole thing. But Buffalo Trace is the place to start. It's like $28 for a bottle of Buffalo Trace, and it's really good bourbon. Listen, the key here is that these big distilleries, they're putting their entry-level bourbon out there, not because it's the best bourbon in the world, but because it's really good for the price, and that's supposed to hook you into their distillery, right? So if you get hooked on the Elijah Craig, you might start thinking, gosh, I got to go find me some Parker's Heritage and pay up for that. Or if you get hooked on the Buffalo Trace, you might think, oh, man, Buffalo Trace is great, but Colonel Stagg, you know, General Stagg and Colonel Taylor and, you know, all these other ones, they're even better. I got to go get these. So that's what they're hoping for. So they're putting out really high quality products for cheap prices. So that's why you start here. That's why you start here. $28? Come on. Are you kidding me? All right. fourth bottle. There's only five or six, I think, here that I mentioned. Fourth bottle is going to be a bottle of Jefferson's Ocean. Got to get a bottle of Jefferson's. Jefferson's is just such a unique story. I mean, people connect with the stories about these brands. Some of the stories have to do with prohibition or bootlegging or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's just a million stories about a million different brands. Jefferson's decided when they started making their whiskey that they were going to do what the whiskey makers did 100 years ago, which is we're going to take our barrels and we're not going to put them in a rick house yet, which is where they mature barrels. So just a storehouse. Rick house is another word for storehouse. Special storehouse, but still storehouse. Not going to put it in a rick house. We're going to put it on a boat. We're going to float it down the Ohio River to the Mississippi. We're going to get to the Mississippi. We're going to float it down the Mississippi into the Gulf. When we get to the Gulf, we're going to float it around Florida and up the East Coast. And this is what they used to do a long time ago to get their bourbon to the market. What was the market? The market was Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Boston, New York City. This is the market. So you got to get your whiskey to market, right? This is what they used to do. And by floating it, you're changing the humidity. You're changing the temperature. You get down south there, pretty hot. That changes the whiskey. And you're also agitating the barrels. So you're shaking them up as they're going along. And that changes the whiskey. So it's a pretty interesting story. It's a pretty interesting product, and it's very good. And it's not that expensive. So I'm going for a $35 to $45 bottle of Jefferson's as one of these starter positions. All right, now, it just wouldn't be right if all you bought was bourbon. You got to buy a little scotch. Scotch is the basis of all of this. I mean, let's face it. They were doing this long before America was here. Long before America was distilling anything, Scotland was making scotch. It's a very good product. It's different in taste. It tends to have a little bit more smoky, peaty, they call it peat, smoke to peat kind of taste to it. Whereas your bourbon is sweeter. And as Americans, you know, we're probably used to the sweet. So a lot of people who start with scotch end up switching to bourbon because it's sweeter. It's just, it's friendlier. It has a, they call it a little burn when you drink a little bit of bourbon. That's called a Kentucky hug. So you could add that to your repertoire of knowledge. Okay. All right. So I'm going to recommend you pick between either one of these two bottles. I'm going to recommend to you a Macallan's 12-year-old or a Johnny Walker Black. Both scotches, very different. Macallan's is a single malt, typically 12. You're gonna start with the 12-year-old. You might find you love the fruity floral notes. This is so good. I gotta, you know, what's the 18-year-old taste like? Oh, and well, now you're stepping up from a $50 to $70 bottle at the 12-year-old to a $250 bottle. So you can get up there in price pretty quickly with the ages of some of these things. Start with the 12. Get yourself a bottle of Macallan's or a bottle of Johnny Walker Black. Johnny Walker's all about blending. So remember I said Macallan's is single malt. That means it comes from a single distillery. Johnny Walker Black is blended. They have like 31 different distilleries all over Scotland. And they're bringing bottles together. And they're masters at tasting what they're creating. And so they got the beakers going, they're blending this stuff. And it's like, okay, we got, you know, barrel number, whatever from distillery number, whatever. And we're mixing it with this barrel and that barrel and bam, this is good stuff. So they spend their time doing that and they make a great product for a great price. So buy a bottle of scotch. That would be my recommendation. And finally, the last one is your choice. I'm going to give you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 names, but I could add more to that list. You choose. And all of these are going to be less than $50. So they're all bourbons. They're all great. You're not going to go wrong. You're not going to get something and go,
I don't like that. That's not going to happen. All right. Horse Soldier. Great story. You're going to love the bourbon. Great product. Great price. Woodford. You've probably seen it, like if you're into at all bourbon or whatever, and you've ever flown on an American Airlines jet. Well, if you ever ask for a bourbon, guess what you get? Woodford. Very good. And they've got a lot of different, they call them expressions, a lot of different products that they're putting out under the Woodford name. And it's really good stuff. And the beginning opening level bottles are really good. The next is going to be Old Forester, which is all about making a consistent product over decades. So these guys are chemical and tasting engineers, and they are making this great product over and over and over again. They got five or six different expressions, and they're making a great product. So that's a choice. Another choice, and I'm going to introduce a new terminology for you here, is NDP, non-distilling producer. Okay. And NDP is like, what do you mean non-distilling? How can a bourbon company be a non-distilling bourbon company? Well, there's a big company just over the border from Kentucky and Indiana called MGP. Monster. I mean, just monster distillery. And they make a lot of product, and they put a lot of different mash bills out, a lot of different recipes, and then a lot of different age statements. And then other distilleries, like the next one I'm going to talk about called Penelope, they can go there and they can say, they can try them all, and they can go, I like this 8-year-old, or I really want this 4-year-old, and they'll get barrels. Many as they want, lots of barrels, like ship them to me, label them for me, put my name on them. So they're white labeling the product. MGP is the producer. Penelope is the non-distilling producer. They didn't distill the product, but they might do a little something to finish it. So we've talked about finishing on this program. Finishing is really cool. Makes the whiskey sometimes go from good to great. So finishing techniques of second barrels, extra staves, extra wood in the, you know, these are all different things that you can do. Even Jefferson's, which we already talked about, finishing their product by shipping it. So by sailing it down the rivers and into the oceans and going all over the world, they're finishing their product differently, maturing their product differently than most other people are doing it. So Penelope's a choice for you. And finally, this is one I really like, Revel. So I had never tried Revel. I was going to do a podcast on them, and I'm like, stuff is great. It's really good. It has a really cool story. Listen to the podcast if you want to hear the story. I'm not even going to tell it to you. You got to listen to the Revel podcast. Great story about rock and roll, bourbon, and whiskey. You're going to love it. So there you have it. If you buy these, if you buy one of each of these things, Four Roses, Elijah Craig, Buffalo Trace, Jefferson's, McAllen's, let's call it. And let's say you pick a Rebel. About $250. So I said you could do this for less than $500. You can definitely do it for less than $500. No question about it. You know, all of these products are going to be available at Total Wine or at the ABC store. These are easy to find. They're high quality. And they're not expensive. And you're going to love it. Enjoy. You know, what's the one thing that's on your mind that, like, I really want to get this message out?
See, if you're talking about the family and the brands, that obviously we're family-owned and family-run, so very proud of that. World's Most Awarded. And that's for Glenfiddich and for above any family-owned and family-run. And we pioneered the finishing process. And it's the world's most handcrafted single malt. It's still made the way it was made 100 years ago. So that's what we talk about. I would encourage your listeners to experiment, you know, to try a few different whiskies to find one they like. Start with the 12 Glenfiddich Original or the 12 Balvenie Double Wood, and then you can work your way up.